I teach high school automotive technology at Alhambra High School in Martinez. A little bit about myself, I'm the father of three kids. They actually are the ones that trained me how to be a teacher. I've been married for 34 years, twice to the same woman. That's another story I'm not going to tell this morning. I came to teaching later in life. I earned my bachelor's in vocational education from CSU Sacramento. I was 49 when I graduated. I worked in the automotive service industry for 30 years. I love to make a difference in the lives of the kids I teach. I finally figured out at 49 what I was supposed to do with my life. I probably would have done something earlier if I could have figured it out, but there it was at 49. When I got into the shop that I work in now, it was a mess. It was horrible. Dirty. The kids were really unruly. It was not really fun to go to work, but it was what I wanted to do. I expanded the program that I'm in with a bunch of my community partners. I wrote a lot of grants. And on a side note, if you go into teaching, you have two options. You can either complain that there's not a lot of money, or you can learn to write grants. I'm serious. There's just not a lot of money. And I am a good grant writer. Part of the Voc Ed program up at Sac State was a grant writing class. And I've won over $20,000 in the last 5 years in grants. Probably more than that. But my favorite one, the one I wrote this year, was for plants in the auto shop. There was a study done in the 90s by NASA on plants that clean the environment. And so I went, hey, let's write a grant. So I wrote one for $2,500, and it was funded. And I had a bunch of I suggest use donors choose, find out what that is. It's been successful for some, not successful for others. It depends on how many friends you have. I'm just going to say, because you put the pinch on your friends for cash. They're usually serving themselves, and you're serving other people. So it should be pretty easy. I like begging for my kids. My program earned the highest certification possible in automotive technology. It's the National Automotive Training and Education Foundation certification. So we're nationally certified. There's only two shops in the Bay Area that are. I have one-to-one computer technology. Our whole school has one-to-one right now, but the auto shop had it 3 years ago. I have computers all over my classroom. Kids don't go wanting. I need time on task, and I can't have 22 kids or 20 or 30 kids fighting for 8 computers. It creates chaos and pandemonium. I have 8 kids working and 22 kids who can't sit down running around the class. Not a good thing. My shop is actually stunning. If you walk in, I walk in every day and go, this is absolutely incredible. But I wrote a lot of grants, and we make a lot of money. It's the auto shop, so we make some money, and it really helps. I support my kids who want to be hobbyists. I support my kids who want to go to industry. We have an internship program, so I have kids between their junior and senior year in high school that are actually working at automotive dealerships. I have kids at BMW, kids at Honda, kids at Toyota. Trying to expand this year into diesel, so I have people that want to take my kids doing diesel. I don't teach diesel, but they want to do diesel, so we're going to do diesel. We're going to see how that works. My students have, last year we had one student, there's automotive championships. I don't know if you probably never knew that, but in last year we had one student that went to state in one competition. This year we have 13 that are going. I'll get choked up at some point. It's really cool. The kids work really hard. So last year we took a third place in our region. This year we swept at places 1 through 5. So Martinez just keeps giving me better and better kids every year. I don't know what to tell you. I've heard it otherwise, but that's what I hear. That's what I see. Over the last 3 years, there's another competition that we participate in. My students have taken Northern California for the last 3 years. The state winner gets to go to Ford headquarters. And this last year, we took the state. So we were on the front lawn of Ford World Headquarters participating in the national championships. Each of those students, I have two students per year that compete in that. Each of those students who's won the Northern California competition won $30,000 in scholarships each. So it's about $180,000 in scholarships that have come out of my classroom. I'm really proud of that. It gives these kids, some of them are going to college and just went, look, we're wrenches, this is what we do. If we can do this, then it's awesome. And so they have another career. Some didn't. Some just said, this is what I want to do. And it gives them a real leg up to get post-secondary education in the skills that they want to, or in the job that they want to pursue. You know, one of the things I want to share with you is what I've learned from my students. For those of us who teach first, few will ever forget the first year of teaching. And I can say that mine is also easily remembered. The most significant lesson I remember happened during that time. I had designed a lesson to teach the four-stroke engine cycle. So I told the students to imagine they were the piston inside the engine, and we were going to go through the motions to understand what was happening. Now, if you don't know the four-stroke engine cycle, I may lose you, but try to stay with me on this. In unison, the class would squat down and simulate the intake stroke as they would breathe in, simulating how a valve would open and air and fuel would come in the cylinder. Then they'd hold their breath and they'd stand back up, simulating compression stroke at the top. They love this part. They'd holler, boom, as the spark plug would fire and drive the piston back down in the cylinder. And then they'd stand back up again on the exhaust stroke, pushing all the exhaust gases back out. And if you didn't know, that's the four-stroke engine cycle. And I explained to them that it happened endlessly while the car was running. And then I would grab a six-cylinder engine from the shop, and I'd show them how the pistons looked as they went up and down inside the cylinders. And they loved that. They loved things that move. They loved getting out of their seats. They loved doing something. I asked for volunteers to simulate the symphony of motion that happened inside the engine. So I had six students line up in three pairs right in front. And they would go through the four strokes. But now each stroke only fires every other time. So there's a boom every other time they go up and down. So it doesn't happen evenly. So basically, all these six kids are going boom, 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 hollering boom, and it never goes very well, and they don't get it right, and everybody's laughing and laughing at them, and they're laughing. Some of them are embarrassed. It's pretty fun. The students that first volunteered were the students that were eager to get out of their seat at any time, and they were the ones who were happy to make noise at any time in my classroom. You know who I'm talking about. So I asked for volunteers for a second time. Nobody came forward. So I selected my kids that had been excellent classroom performers. Well, they refused to participate. They wouldn't get out of their seats. I encouraged them by telling them it'd be fun, come on. They wouldn't budge. I was sure they would, so I'm struggling. What am I going to do? I went back over the lesson. The bell rang. Thank goodness it was my prep period next. So I just kind of, I thought through this whole thing. Walked over to the teacher's lounge to get a cup of coffee, the elixir of life, if you ask me and the rest of my family. And just as I was pouring my cup of coffee, I can still see the coffee going in the cup. It hit me. If I had walked in that classroom, I would have seen the first set of kids as my excellent classroom performers. I would have seen the second set of students as the reluctant learners. It struck me. It was a moment of enlightenment. The students were very clearly teaching me they don't all learn the same way. What one group of students saw as engaging, fun, and rewarding was the bane of others. It's not that I hadn't been taught this. We all learned it. I just hadn't learned it deep. I hadn't seen it. It took a real-life, hands-on example for it to sink in and for my paradigm to shift. What the kids taught me is that they're all good students. They all want to learn. I just have to be a good teacher to unlock their learning. You know, for those of you that garden, I don't know how many of you garden, but for those of you that garden, have you ever noticed that some plants do well in some lights, in some soils, in certain lights, and other plants do well in other soils and other lights? If plants don't grow, it's not the plant's fault. It's not that they need to try harder. They need different conditions to thrive. I'm the gardener in the classroom. My students won't all learn in the same conditions. I have to plan and design the classroom so that everyone can be engaged and thrive. There's a passage in the book of Proverbs that says that the purposes of a person's heart are deep waters, and someone with understanding draws them out. I want to be someone who hears the deep lessons my students are trying to teach me. My students have taught me that I can create conditions in which everyone can be engaged and learn. That I am responsible for how well they learn. And if I'll take the time to listen and reflect, they'll teach me. Then my classroom will be a place where all students can grow and thrive. Let me be honest with you, this is some of the hardest work I've ever done. I worked physically for 30 years in the collision repair industry. It was hard work, but this is way harder. I'm constantly searching for ways to improve instruction, help my students get jobs, fix their cars, fix their relationships. We do it all. The list goes on and on. If you ask any number of people, though, what the most important quality a teacher should possess, you'll get a variety of answers. But since I have the podium, I'm going to tell you what I think is the most important thing this morning. I think that quality is faith. Let me explain. Faith is synonymous with belief. And this is why I think it's the most important quality. When I teach a lesson to a group of students, I have to believe that it's important that they know what I'm teaching. It doesn't matter whether it's about how to measure a bolt on a car or that I think they should go home and cook dinner for their parents. And I do teach them that. I have to believe that it matters. Otherwise, I'm just another old guy sharing stories. I've got lots of stories, and it can go on and on. But I have to believe that it matters what I'm teaching them. I tell my students that I'm willing to explain to them at any time why they have to learn what I'm teaching them. That's the thing I love about auto. Everything comes together in auto. They have to know math. They have to know science. They have to know how to write. If they can't communicate, technicians who communicate well make 50% more than technicians who don't. Research fact by General Motors. So everything I teach in auto, I believe matters. I want my students to know that I care about them. Have you ever heard the saying that people don't care what you know until they know that you care? I know that I was less likely to listen to a teacher that didn't care about me than one who did. I'm not sure everyone believes this. In fact, I'm sure not everyone believes this. I was talking with a colleague the other day about encouraging their students. And they said, you know, I think they just need a taste of the real world. Not everybody gets encouragement. He said, where's mine? And I thought, I think you missed the point here. It's supposed to go the other way. But his question was actually really well taken. What about the real world? Don't we create the world in the classroom? We are the most significant people in those children's lives when they're in our classroom. We create the mood. There's a marvelous quote that I meant to bring this morning that I forgot, but it's about how we create the classroom. We create the mood. We can make it rain, or we can make the sun come out. So what kind of world do you want to create? What kind of world do you want to create in the classroom? I talked to another colleague, and they said, you know, I'm willing to have a professional relationship with my students. I'll teach them the information they learn. But she doesn't think nor that it's important that she likes the students. I asked my students the other day, do you think I like you? I got two responses. One was, no, those are the kids who I struggle with their behavior. And I had to explain to them, look, really, you guys have to understand, I like you all. Your behavior sometimes I don't like, because it stops me from teaching. But you, I like, I think you're fascinating. They're crazy. High school kids are crazy. They are. They're little kids in big kid bodies going through all kinds of crazy stuff. Man. Anyway, so here's the question. Another question. Is a professional relationship enough? I don't think it is. One of my students said, no, Mr. Wheeler, you don't like us. You love us. That one. I'll get choked up on that one, too. But here's the thing I want to convey to you is you have to figure out what you're going to reward with your attention. You can reward misbehavior by paying attention to it, or you can reward good behavior by paying attention to it. Whether you're a parent or not a parent, I'm going to tell you something. Your kids will get your attention. They will get it. They'll get it for doing the right things. They'll get it for doing the wrong things. But they will get your attention. So you decide what you're going to reward with your attention. You are very powerful in your classroom. I can ignore a student's bad behavior and then notice the slightest change when they have good behavior. I can control my classroom that way. I had a kid I just completely ignored the other day who had a lot of bad behavior. He walked out of my classroom, went to the vice principal's office, and said, I don't know what just happened. And the vice principal, who trusts me, said, well, what do you think you should get from this? It was awesome. It was a great lesson for the kid. I don't suggest you do that one very much. But you can control your classroom by what you notice. If you just pick out the bad kids and focus on their bad behaviors, I'm sorry, I said bad kids. I really don't believe that. I don't believe there's bad kids. I believe there's a lot of bad behavior. You know, the other thing that as a teacher, when I was going through school, and as I started in my young working life, you would hear the phrase, work smarter, not harder. The message people got was, don't work hard. But anybody who's successful will tell you that it doesn't work that way. In fact, if you ask Vince Lombardi, he'll tell you that the only place that success comes before work is in the dictionary. And if you pose that question to Thomas Edison, he'd say that opportunity is missed by most people because it's dressed in overalls and looks like work. My son works for PG&E, triple majored at Cal, really, really great kid. But what I tell people, and I really respect him a lot, he works as hard as he is smart. Anyway, he's working for PG&E now. They had a motivational speaker that came in. He's a football guy in my family. We don't do football, sorry. I couldn't tell you. I think he knew the guy's name, but I didn't, and it was no big deal to me. But anyway, he was a motivational speaker, and he spent 10 years in the NFL. And he said, look, he was talking to people about working smarter. He said, hold on a minute. Let me make sure you understand this, that this is all on the foundation of, I'm assuming you're all working hard to begin with. You don't get anywhere without working hard. My shop doesn't look like it looks because they paid me to do it. And when the kids made some noise about community service, I said, how many hours of community service do you think I do a year here? I love doing this. I love giving to people. It's part of the deal. But working hard, it's kind of how I'm made up. So in my class, I reward hard work. Now, think about this. Not everybody has the same ability to learn. I have some kids in my class. I have one kid that at this skills competition last weekend, he's a freshman. He scored fourth. He's going to state as a freshman. When last year, I only had one student that had ever qualified to go to state. So this kid, I tell him something once, and he understands it. You'll have those kids if you don't already. You may be those kids. Then I have other kids that have to learn, and hopefully you learn this in your teacher education. Some kids have to learn 6 or 15 and sometimes 100 times the same thing over and over before they get it. It is what it is. I can't control that, nor can you. But I can reward hard work. Because if I reward hard work, everyone can be successful in my classroom. And I want to keep kids in school because that's their hope. That's their chance. So if I reward only success, then only a few kids get rewarded. But if I reward hard work and I notice hard work, everybody wins. Does that make sense? It's a big, big deal. Now, I was talking with my wife last night. And I should tell you, I have two great gifts in this life. Well, there's more than that. But two of my greatest gifts, one was my mom, and the other is my wife. My mom passed, so I'll probably get choked up when I say this. But my mom just taught me that I'm loved. And I get to carry that around. Not everybody does. But my wife, she had to put up with me for 34 years. And honestly, if I got to be a good teacher pretty fast, it's because of my wife. I would go home at night, and she'd say, you said what? We obviously talk about what we do all day, right? She's an elementary school principal, and she's really good. She said, you said what? You can't say that. And then sometimes I tell her I did. She said, that's awesome. Great job. So I got training every night. I've had training every night the last 6 years. It's not just classes in, you know, sessions on. So, and I'm really grateful. We heard earlier about how your teachers are the most significant people in your life, and I'll tell you, she shared this with me and has a number of times. My wife's life changed in fifth grade. Her mom died when she was 4. In fifth grade, her dad died. And that did change her life, but the most significant thing that changed was that she pulled her fifth grade teacher pulled her aside just before she was getting ready to move to go to another school. And she said, you're very smart. I'm sure you're going to do very well. It was the first time in my wife's life that she heard she was smart. And that's all she needed. One comment changed her life. My kids, my wife drives me. She controls the mood in our home. Most wives do. But she doesn't tolerate, she won't lie, she won't compromise. She says it's not okay to dislike kids on company time. She's an elementary school principal. So I take that to work and I go, it's not okay to dislike kids. I can't, I gotta figure out a way to love them. And that level of care and concern as a principal, she knows that she controls. There's 660 kids in her school. She said, I'm responsible for all of them. I have to believe in every one of them. So we talked about faith. If students don't believe that hard work is noticed and that hard work will produce learning, and they don't, and then they believe, if they do believe that, then they believe the key to success is hard work and not just being smart. Then they believe they can all be successful. Then students don't leave school. They continue to get an education. Remember that I teach automotive technology. My goal for my students who are interested in this career field is for them to pursue additional technical education, then to get a job, then to go to school to get an AA, then a bachelor's degree, and then to run the doggone place where they work. That's my goal. It's stated. I clearly expect that of them. Somebody's going to have to run those shops. It may as well be the kids from Martinez that went to my class. That's how I feel. The best thing we can do is to believe our students into being. That's where faith comes in. Faith and belief are the same thing. Seeing more in them than they can possibly imagine. And then noticing each success on that path and rewarding their hard work. I'm constantly working on having that much faith and working hard for my students. It's tiring, but there's nothing I would rather do. And finally, at 49, I figured out what I wanted to do with my life. Thanks for letting me share this all with you.